Hey, everybody, it's Adam Seward. It's 3 o'clock on Monday, so this is Awakened Life. It's also still the present moment. It's still eternity. Rick, Paul, how you guys doing?
Great.
Hi, Adam.
Good today.
Eric, how about you? How you doing today?
It's a gorgeous day. We just, you know, had a great Thanksgiving, so, you know, I'm doing pretty good.
It's really gorgeous in the studio here today, too. I mean, it's
sun
just...
sun through the window. Beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. Clear skies. Sun is setting. It's a nice day to talk about awakening. You guys ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
So, for the last few weeks, we've been talking about the masculine heart, with heart, what men need to know about women, sex, and enlightenment. And it's been a fun ride. We've had some very interesting developments, you know, women who are very interested in the topic and very enthusiastic that men are talking about it, as well as some women who thought, you know, you guys don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Who thought that?
You know, I have to admit, you know, going into it, I expected probably a bit of both. One thing I appreciated about what Gary said last week when he came on the show is that he doesn't claim to embody it. I mean, and talking to him, he certainly does. But one of the things he said was, you know, I don't necessarily claim to embody this. This is emerging. But there's actually someone else that's here with us that has been having kind of an interesting time in his effort to embody it. One of the quotes that we have been using to kind of go off of for those 3 weeks was, you know, it's time for men to evolve beyond the macho jerk ideal. And according to my mom, it sounds like my dad may have heard the macho jerk part, but not the evolved beyond part.
Yes, that is in fact the case.
So now, Dad, just to recap, it's we need to transcend the macho jerk ideal, not become it. So
yes, I and I'm learning very quickly.
Well, it's a fine line between, you know, having what does it mean to have spine,
yes,
but not to be a jerk.
Yeah.
Right. Not to be macho.
The quote, just to recap, is, you know, it's time for men to evolve beyond the macho jerk ideal, all spine, no heart. Mm-hmm. It's also time to evolve beyond the sensitive and caring wimp ideal, all heart, no spine.
Yes, this is the integration with both. So you don't want to get into a turf war, or, you know, right? Power right. play.
How's it showing up for you?
Not good. I think I might have... overstepped my masculine bounds.
Okay.
And I guess the lesson to be learned from this is that, you know, for the longer term relationships that are working, for both the partners, I need to just, you know, go with what's working, and I'm happy with it. She's happy with it. So I think the level of my spine is dialed in right now. I need to just kind of go with it.
So what you just said, I think, is really, in, you know, it reminds me of what we were calling stage two.
Okay.
You know, it's where we all agree that there's a, it's like a contract, like each person, you know, agrees. Now, stage three is something else. But one thing that came up, even as we were discussing this before we came in, is that healthy stage two is really important. That's one of the things you said, Paul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So by agreements, you make agreements. And you probably have a history of having things that work. Like there are realms in which you run the show. It's your castle. And then it might be like, say, the kitchen, where she runs the show. This is the way it was with my mom and dad.
Yeah.
He would run, like, finance. When it came to the money, he was in charge. He'd walk in the kitchen. He was definitely not in charge.
Mm-hmm.
She was in charge.
Yeah.
And let him know if he started messing around. So there is an element of discretion. You've got to pick your battles, right? See, because when you're taking the 30,000-foot view, you're unmoving. You have spine, but it's about the big things, not the details, right?
So what's moving forward? After our discussion today and kind of recapping, I mean, what are you thinking is going to really be the key for you?
I think the key is going to be honoring what's worked in our relationship, and really, like Paul said, recognizing that there's certain roles by agreement that we follow, and honoring those agreements,
right.
And not trying to be more masculine and taking over some of those other areas
mm-hmm.
when traditionally I've allowed my partner to control those areas. Mm.
So if there's a realm where you find yourself comfortable in the masculine, you're going to want to compete at some level. That's how you're going to thrive, is by doing, like, say it's Thanksgiving turkey. You want to cook it perfectly or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but if the feminine, it's if you're in a more feminine mode, you want to be praised. You want to be praised for what you're doing, you're right? And
yeah.
seen and
yeah.
all that, okay?
Yeah, that's how the feminine grows.
That's how they grow.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So if you're, were you praising?
No.
Okay. So that's easy. Just stop what you're doing, listen, start praising.
You
see what happens.
You guys are good.
Just simple. There are simple rules, right?
You know, this stuff is not easy necessarily. You know, I mean, this is about bringing, you know, the masculine and feminine, which are opposites. You know, there are two polarities, and holding them together in a state of tension, which is what is known as polarity.
Okay.
So this is no easy task, and so I appreciate it. There's been a few times, Paul, I think in our first show, you were very vulnerable about some things you were experiencing, and, you know, Dad, I give you credit for, you know, bringing your real life in here today.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, in large part, these tracks are being cut. There are new relationships that are everyone sort of watching because there were old traditional relationships, and those things aren't working.
Right.
I just listening, just walking and listening to this whole snafu about Herman Cain and the sexual harassment.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good example of how in the past there were certain mores about how men were in a patriarchy and they ran things and that sort of there wasn't even sexual harassment, right? When with his dad, for example, that term didn't even exist. So now it shifted with the Clarence Thomas and everything. But he is still a very much a traditionalist. So how that's being interpreted by those folks who vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what Bill Maher said about the guy, he said, what can you say about a politician who wears a pimp hat through a sex scandal? I mean, it's hilarious. We can't even. Yeah, and so, but what second stage is characterized by is the sensitivity. So you want to be sensitive to everyone,
yeah.
right? So that's the worst thing you can do is be insensitive
yeah.
to where you might just be what you think is flirtatious, actually very oppressive and insensitive, and right?
Mm. Yeah.
So that's the cruel thing.
Mm. Yeah.
And it becomes a big power play at the second stage. And everybody, and that's why when we talk about it in the studio, we're going to get pushbacks with email. Because
naturally.
People, yes.
Yeah.
So what Gary was talking about, what's beyond that?
Mm.
Do you know? What is beyond it, where people are both embracing their masculine and feminine?
It's art.
That's right.
It's art. Yeah.
And I tried to think of an example of a couple like that, and I came up with, and tell me if you agree,
mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
What I would say about Brad Pitt is a lot of his mannerisms, affectation, the way he dresses, very feminine. He's soft-spoken. He dresses, all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's played gay characters. He played effeminate characters. You'd never see, like, Humphrey Bogart play a gay character back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's very comfortable with that. At the same time, he's silent, strong, very masculine. He was Tyler Durden in Fight
mm-hmm.
Club,
yep.
the ultimate guy's guy.
Which is actually a very, you know, it's references the Tao Te Ching. A lot of people don't know that, but Fight Club... a lot of the themes are very are mirrored well in the Tao Te Ching. For example, you know, the first line of the Tao Te Ching is the way that can be spoken of is not the true way. Well, what's the first rule of Fight Club?
No talking about Fight Club. Also rule number two.
I love the part where his condo blows up and the yin-yang coffee table is laying there in the street.
Hey, we should do a Fight Club show, I'm telling you. We could whole hour on that.
No question.
But the flip side is Angelina Jolie, right? She's very, just the way she speaks, her doe-eyed, very feminine. She's mm-hmm. very, very feminine, mm-hmm. you know, and sexy in that way. But she's had, I'm just trying to count the number of guys she's punched in the face in one of her movies, or back kicked,
sure.
or knocked out.
Sure.
And it's 100. She's probably beat up 100 guys on film.
So what?
She's strong and she's right.
It's a great example of someone who it has found through acting, you know, maybe as a medium, a way of having a very strong masculine and feminine.
Right.
A balanced core.
Then you move beyond any kind of identification with one or the other. Then in the moment, what's appropriate? It might be a spine or it might be sensitivity.
And that's art.
That's
that
art.
Flow with the moment.
That's
so,
exactly right.
So, you know, we absolutely love talking about, you know, masculine and feminine and as aspects of the one, you know, and how mastering these is part of what it means to live an awakened life. I had someone recently ask me, you know, Adam, I was listening to the show last week. You were talking about waking up and showing up. It's like, I get the showing up, but what about the waking up? And so we've been talking about showing up. That's what it, you know, this mass, you know, the navigating the masculine and feminine is about. But today we're going to talk about waking up. And so that's the realm of meditation, koan practice, inquiry. And so when we come back from break, we're gonna start into this conversation about what is waking up. You know, it sounds like that's the first part of this process. So keep listening. We'll be right back.
Kidzen Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together we have partnered to bring you Awakened Life as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awakened Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting with you. Welcome back to Awaken Life. This is Adam. And I'm joined here, as usual, by Rick Seward, Paul DeFuria. And today we're talking about waking up. What is the awakened mind? And how is it that one move into that consciousness or that awareness? And one of the obvious things that we talk about is meditation as a path. And then in addition to that, what's known as inquiry, or also known as koan practice. And so we're going to be talking about meditation. We're also going to talk about what is a koan, what is a koan practice, what is inquiry in general for that matter. And we really want to give a lot of honor and respect to a man by the name of Jumpo Kelly Roshi, the creator of Mondo Zen, because that's Mondozen. And Paul and I both, I remember I go, hey, Paul, have you seen this Jumpo Kelly guy? And Paul, I mean, I think you were just like.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan.
We
it's
both.
Brilliant, just, brilliant work.
I mean, it's just very deep, very clear, very realized person and doing really, he's kind of a known as a rebel in the Zen community because he's sort of taken things to. You know, he's put his own twist on traditions that are thousands of years old.
Yeah.
And so some of the more traditional, we were talking about traditional, some of the more traditionalists in the Zen community may be seeing that as, you know, going too far outside of the.
Well, I think it's art, you know, there's an edge to it. And he's very avant-garde. You know, it's like, okay, let's take a lot of those old traditions have a patriarchy and a lot of stuff that doesn't work with it anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you let go of that? But you take what's really valuable, what's eternal, the eternal truths and the genuine insight that comes from the year, you know, thousands of years of practice by brilliant spiritual minds and incorporating it into the world. And so that makes a difference. And why bother? Why bother to do it? And so that he makes, and he talks a lot about meditation. And I guess maybe that's where we should start.
He's compacted, you know, so much. That's one of the things that he says. It's like pressurized and distilled.
Distilled, yeah.
You know, thousands of years of teaching.
And we'll try to do that to the best that we can. You know, we're
absolutely that's
dilettantes, but why not?
Well, that's really the role of the bodhisattva. You know, I mean, that's the meaning of skillful means, or upaya, is the Buddhist term. It involves teaching, you know, each student according to the level of their understanding. Yeah. And the level of the average student's understanding is not where it's not today where it was, you know, even a year ago with the quickening, you know, the shift.
The upaya or skillful means rise from the depth of your own realization.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, in traditional Buddhist terms, there's a focus on three different aspects or elements of the moment, and those are dukkha, anatta, and anicca.
Anicca, okay. Yeah.
So dukkha is the first rule of the Buddha, which is, you know, they talk about life is suffering. Dukkha means suffering in Pali. Yeah. But it also means unsatisfactory.
And doesn't it also have something to do with a wheel hub that is stuck?
It's stuck. It's a broken hub.
It's like not moving.
Right. And this is the nature of anything that's either what we've defined before as gross or subtle. Anything in the gross or physical realm, or even in the subtle realm of your own mind, or conceptual, nothing is really ever satisfactory. It's never enough. It doesn't work. That's why no matter what you obtain, it's not good enough. Right?
Well, the ego, you know, is said to want more than it wants to have.
That's it.
And that's you know, we're talking about what does it mean to be awake. And really, if you're sentient, if you can think, you know, or if you can feel, touch, smell, then there's wakefulness in you.
That's it. You know? Well,
and the ego is just the one that interprets it and kind of clouds it up. And I think that relates to what you're talking about in terms of dukkha. You know, it's that aspect of our experience. Maybe you call it samsara, the dream.
That's exactly right.
It's just that piece that...
Right. So that's one inquiry into the nation of really where does happiness lie? And, you know, in these things that are objects, you can't find them. So this is a really important thing, because it's not just to say, okay, life is all suffering. It's to say, what is the cause of the suffering? And so the inquiry goes into also this other aspect, anitta, and the other one's anatta. So anatta is selflessness, anitta is impermanence, right? So those are two things that they do koan studies around those two things to go deeply into what does it mean to be selfless and what does it mean to contemplate impermanence.
Right. Permanence, which is all about, which is all the same as what does it mean to awaken?
Well, that's, yes, it's right. All about, well, but the Buddha, bud means awakening, and da means one, the awakened one. And so the question is,
bud, I like that, bud.
Right, bud mind is awakened mind. And so the question in bud is, you know, who's waking up? And
so now we're talking about koans now.
Well, right? We could talk about
them. But that is a sort of the original koan, you know, who awakens?
That's right.
Who awakens?
Right? So explain what a koan is, by the way.
Well, it's an injunction.
That's it.
Right?
It's a question.
It's a question. Yeah. And it's the only way that one can answer it is if they've had a realization.
Well, it's designed to stop the conscious mind from thinking. Right, it's beyond your own mind's ability to answer it.
It deconstructs.
Right.
Our stories.
That's
we were talking about storytelling. So this aspect of the self, or this aspect of the experience, this contracted dukkha, this ego, is questioned.
That's right.
Out of existence.
Yes.
That's
when it's
what a koan.
Well, when you examine it and you look deeply into it, you question it. Yes. You realize there's nothing there. It's empty, and it's fundamentally empty. So the question, like a common, very classic Zen one is, who awakens? Another one is, What's the sound of one hand clapping?
Yeah.
Another is, you know, what did your parents look before? What was the face of your parents before you were born?
Yes. Yeah.
See, these are all, they're trick questions.
Yes. Well, they're riddles. Level, yeah. They're little riddles.
That's it.
And okay. They are actually asked from and as who.
That's right.
Right? Who awakens?
That's right.
That's the question itself. Look at what Dad's laughing over here.
This is good.
The question itself is asked from who.
That's right.
That's the one that's actually asking the question.
Yes. And you know, what you're getting at is the purity of your own mind. That's the fundamental state that's being asked of. So if you come up with some answer, you know, depending on the tradition, you're going to be sent back to meditate more on it. Or
hey,
whack
Dad,
to whack
yeah,
on the
where,
stick.
Where's the Buddha?
Yeah, where is it?
Yeah, right.
That's another classic one. Where's the Buddha? Where's the Buddha?
Paul,
so here's
Paul
where, come on, where's the Buddha? Help Rick out here.
Well, okay. You have to get like any one of the question is that's being asked is supposed to stop the mind from trying to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're trying to do is create the state experience of your pure mind or awareness itself. So the question is not, are you aware of anything? It's not aware of, it's just awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are some answers to that question mm-hmm. to kind of
well, one
stop
of the,
people.
One of the answers, yeah. like who awakens? Right. Well, nobody awakens.
There's no one to awaken.
There's no, you know, there's, right. You know, there's already, you know, awakeness
okay,
is part of the fundamental nature of yourself.
Okay, so this trips people. It tricks people a lot because fundamentally, mm-hmm. your ego will kill me rather than give up the game it's playing, right? So we could talk about how to let go of the ego. We can talk about dropping into empty mind and all the rest. But your ego is like, I'm not going for that. In fact, I will do anything I can to sabotage it, right?
Yes.
So the question of not there is no one to awaken is actually a very subtle and sophisticated one. Well, the question that Jumpo asks, which I love,
mm-hmm.
he says, who are you beyond your feelings and your thoughts? Okay, that's a good one. So it's like, okay, who's awakening? All right, tell me who you are. That's yeah. self-inquiry. Who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you really? And people will say, well, I'm Sam. Okay, good. What else? Well, I'm a carpenter. Okay, what else? You know, it's all the things they do or the things they've been told or the label on their, right?
Sure. And those are the stories as
These
well.
Are stories.
You know, that's part of what you could call them are stories.
Right.
One thing that about calling it a story that I kind of, that I like to add to is that, you know, there's such a thing as a deeper story. You know, it's not a mind story. It's like the universal story or like the great mystery.
That's right.
And that, I just like to be clear that we're not talking about that story. In a sense, that's the personhood of the Buddha, you know, that self that is, you know, within. So, it's time for our new segment. It's coming up here. This is called I Had a Dream.
I have a dream that one day everybody shall be great.
All right, so this new segment, the idea is for someone, if they've had a dream that was particularly symbolic or meaningful, and related to this idea of awakening that we talk about so often, that they would share that. And it just so happens that I had a dream recently, and I feel like it really is related because it was a special dream. I'd have to say I hadn't really had. I mean, it reminds me of some of you have heard me talk about this dream I had of a whistle and a key was another symbol that showed up earlier in my life that was very meaningful to me. But in this dream, you know, I there's no other dream I've ever had in my life where I would say I popped into another dimension. But there's no other way to describe it. Literally, in the dream, I popped into another dimension. And this place was so blissful. You know, some of you may be familiar with near-death experiences, and people will, you know, pop into these places that are just so, so blissful and so heavenly. And anyway, I popped into this other dimension, this blissful dimension, where this bliss just ran in and through everything. And I remember sort of a green rolling hills. And but the thing about this place that stood out to me and still does is that there was a song that everyone could hear that just was playing all the time in and through everything. And everyone could hear the song. And there was so much energy, all, you know, continually moving through this place and through everyone, that whenever anyone was to go anywhere, like to go to visit a friend, or something, they would dance. They would continually dance to the same beautiful song, most beautiful song you've ever heard. And the way they would dance is they would spin. Now, many of you out there may be familiar with the whirling dervish. You know, Rumi was a great example of someone who would spin as part of a spiritual practice, literally just spinning in a state of ecstatic communion with God. Well, when I had this dream, I had no idea that such a practice existed. Yet that's what I and the other people that were in this place were doing. So it got me thinking about, well, what if that's part of the awakened life? You know, what if there is a state of being that's possible, you know, if it exists somewhere, maybe it's possible here, where there's so much bliss and so much energy that you are in a continual state of communion and expression through some form. Very tantric. That's what I wanted to share with you. I'll let you do what you will with that. we're going to break. We'll be right back. Again, you're listening to Awaken Light.
Are you upside down on your home loan and facing foreclosure? Washington's Foreclosure Fairness Act takes effect on July 13th and requires your mortgage holder to grant you a face-to-face meeting to negotiate modifications to your loan that may let you keep your house. More than 5,600 homes were seized in the first 3 months of this year in the state of Washington. Don't let this happen to you. Visit foreclosurefairness.net. That's foreclosurefairness.net. Or call 206-818-9732, your home safety net.
Call the Oprah of radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
Listen to the Marie Manucherry Show, where energy and medicine meet, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. It's intelligent and provocative radio. Tuesdays is boot camp for the soul to help you soar. Thursdays, Marie interviews guests from an incredibly talented lineup. To learn more about Marie and her radio show, visit energyintuitive.com or connect with her on Facebook and Twitter. That's the Marie Manucherry Show, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon, here on Alternative Talk 1150.
No, you're not alone, and it's not just you. The things you're experiencing are actually being felt around the world, and there is something you can do about it. Tune in for It's Not Just You with Lorelei Spiegelman, Susan Wayman, and Siobhan Mitchell, three professional women of wisdom who compare current events and how they offer you insight into your own personal world. Monday morning at 9 a.m.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Adam. You're listening to Awaken Life here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. So today we're talking about waking up. We talk about waking up. We're talking about showing up. I mean, the title of the show is Awaken Life. So what does it mean to awaken, and how does one do that? Well, awakening is a realization. It's nothing new. It's just coming into contact, conscious contact, you could say, or into the awareness of who you are, who you've always been. It's about, you know, inquiring into the mystery of the universe. One of the ways of doing that is through the koan process, asking questions like, you know, what's your relationship to the Buddha or to Christ or these other beings that have transcended time? You know, here it is thousands of years after their run on our planet, and we're still talking about them. But essentially, meditation, inquiry, which, you know, Byron Katie's Who Would You Be Without Your Story? That's inquiry, self-inquiry, actually. Who would you be? And koan process. And we're referring specifically to the Mondo Zen work of Jinpo Kelly Roshi. So meditation, koan practice, are these things that are done separately all the time, or can they be combined?
Absolutely. They put them together now. And it's a kind of move toward a more integral practice. Why not use different things that work for different people and combine them? So it can be an aid for your meditation.
This morning I was sitting, as I usually do, and which isn't, I don't sit to get anywhere. I just love it. I just enjoy it. It's one of my favorite parts of the day. But it's not a means to an end. And we could talk about that. I mean, there's nowhere to get to. That's part of what sitting on the cushion is about realizing, ultimately. But I was sitting there and I go, who's watching? You know, who's watching this? Who's watching this? Who's watching this? You know, and where do you end up, right? You end up in the seer. And that's a koan. It's a question that is pointed at a deeper realization. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, it's a depth of purity and clarity of consciousness, essentially.
That's great, yeah. And those sort of questions shatter your ego, which, you know, heretofore has been running the show. It blows it into smithereens, which is kind of the idea. What's left beyond that? So the idea is not to destroy it because you're against it. It's to look at it until it just falls away. And then what's left? And what's left is what they call mirror mind, or, you know,
Zen mind.
Just, you know, pure mind. It's the depth. And that's the depth of genuine insight where, you know, you can live a compassionate life. Right, you can live what they, you know, what the Dalai Lama always talk about, you know, right action and
right. And they, you know, they don't use the word God in Zen tradition. They don't really relate to that. But it's just like part of that Zen mind. It's like, wow, like God's here with us, you know, right in front of you, in a sense.
Christ consciousness.
Or Christo. Yeah. Consciousness.
And that's the whole idea of Anitta, which is empty mind. You're emptying things out. It's not about sitting there to gain something. And this is something we've been taught, that it's our job to do something and figure things out, work it out. This is actually an undoing, an unlearning.
Yeah.
Just sitting and letting it all drop down still to a still point where your mind empties out of all these concepts and ideas.
Yes.
Who are you beyond your ideas and your feelings and these thoughts? Those come and go. And the answer is something. It's more of a state experience.
Yes.
It's a state of bliss, a state of purity, a state of freedom. We talk a lot about freedom. So when you're talking about aspects or objects or things, that ain't it. It's all when you get to the point where you're starting to talk about more like a state experience of freedom and openness and empty. What emptiness means is, okay, now you realize there's a deeper aspect of yourself that's empty. Well, that's... Oh, there's a lot of room in emptiness. It gives space for everything.
Limitless.
Limitless possibility, right? So you have so much room for the things that you've been judging and struggling with in your life. And then they can, what we call self-liberate. Mm. You don't have to do anything. It liberates on its own. Mm. You just stop fighting and stop adding oppositional energy to something. Because all that does is keep it going. That's what your ego is doing, or what the guard does to keep giving it purpose so it doesn't die.
I see you, Dad. I see you nodding your head. Is this making sense?
No, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay. So then your feelings have become, instead of a problem, a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because your feelings are a sort of way that all this universal mind, or the energy and intelligence of the universe, is communicating with you. And what Jumpo says, which I love... Mm-hmm. As he says, it's like the phone is ringing. Pick up.
You're being called.
Pick up the phone.
Yeah. Well, you know, on my website, it says the great whistle is blown. The call to awaken is now. You've heard the call and you've already answered.
That's it.
That's it, though. It's the whistle's blowing. The phone is ringing.
Yeah.
You're being called.
Answer it. Find out. There's no opposition. There's no resistance. And you're not trying to overcome it or fix it or stop it. You're asking it's an open mind that you have. I'm curious. I need more info. Why is this happening? There's something here for me.
In Zen mind, beginner's mind, one of the first quotes in the book is, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. in the expert's mind, there are few.
That's great. But the question of who are you is significant. You have to be able to answer that question. And it happens for we humans is neurolinguistically. If you can't, if I stump you, if you don't have any answer to that, well, then how are you going to live it? How are you going to live it as your life if you don't, you can't speak it?
Yeah.
How are you going to manifest it? And so when you're asking who are you, another way to look at it also is who am I? Who are we? Who are we together? Like, right, these are all aspects of this thing is this awareness is runs through it.
And there's something else I want to say about the koan process too, is that, you know, basically what the koan, whether it's Mondo Zen, the work of Byron Katie, self-inquiry, that what the object of that question is, because the questions are designed to penetrate, you know, that's their purpose. It's really what the koan is asking, ultimately what all koans are asking is what's real.
That's right.
What's the truth? And that's, you know, Byron Katie, her, is it true? That's her main, you know,
well,
her first question.
Let's break it down, because what are the four questions she asks again?
Well, it's, is it true?
Yes.
Can you absolutely know that it's true?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say yes to that, you're done.
Okay.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Your mind is just too stubborn.
Is it true? Is it absolutely true?
Yeah. Who would you be without that thought?
Okay.
Then
the turnaround question, right?
Well, we missed one. No, it's, oh, how do you react when you think that thought is number three?
Okay.
How do you feel? And who would you be without that thought is number four? That, and so then you're in self-inquiry. And you know, the purpose is literally to deconstruct your view. So whatever these thoughts or feelings, you know, this view that you're, you know, this angle that you're looking at reality, for, which is usually from the a lot of time the ego is unaware of this, you know, awakened consciousness. Generally speaking, the ego is not aware of this awakened consciousness that is the ground, the fundamental ground of being. And so its view is limited. You know, in Buddhism, and one of the, you know, precepts or part of the Eightfold Path is correct view. Well, it's not the correct view. It's wrong view.
That's
so,
right.
You know, deconstructing that, cutting through your ideas, and allowing you to come to an experience of deep,
yes,
clear consciousness.
And
that
is
the purpose of the
koan. And the experience is what they call not knowing. See, so
yeah,
that's
I don't know.
That's it.
Mind. I don't know mind.
That's it. Yeah. So from that, everything's possible. If you have some idea, right? It's every idea is just a concept. It's a thought object.
I don't know about
it
that, Paul.
Is,
I don't know about that.
It's limited, finite thing. So what it does is it limits you. And what people do is they identify with that, and then they fight for it. And the choice is always really clear. Ram Dass used to say, you got a very clear choice. You want to be right, or you want to be happy, right? You want to be right. You want to be right about your ideas. And most people live from that spot. They spend their time defending themselves or invalidating other people's positions, right? And what they're sacrificing is their own happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And this not knowing mind actually gives you access to a subtle state of being, which is unreasonably joyful, that's running through everything. So
unreasonable,
you, right?
I like
this
that.
Is, so how much of this do
irreverently
you,
joyful?
Unreasonable.
Yeah. Yes.
It's beyond reason, see? And so the idea is it's not, it doesn't have any reason. It's ridiculous and nonsensical. No, it transcends reason, so it includes it, but it also goes way beyond. And in this way, in your life, when you're in a stressful situation or you're in an argument or you're fighting with someone, if you pay attention and you develop through meditation or these practices a capacity to hold the not knowing mind,
mm-hmm,
or emptiness and not a mind, you know, you can drop into it. You can actually laugh at yourself while you're in the midst of a total barn burning fight. You know, you realize that you can let it go because it's just nothing. You're just playing in the drama of the story, and it's fine to have a story, but do you know it's the story?
Right. It goes back to that question of, you know, what really matters or what's true? You know, what means anything? And a lot of the time, you know, when we inquire, we do see that what we thought was so important, what we thought meant so much, mm-hmm, what we believed we had to defend with our lives, it was not the case.
Yeah.
So we're talking about koan process. We're talking about awakening. We haven't talked much about meditation. So when we come back from break, we're going to get into that a little bit more. You're listening to Awaken Life right here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. Be right back.
At the law offices of Richard D. Seward, we care about our clients. We offer important legal advice and services to help them grow their wealth and protect it. We manage the risks and help the financially distressed through the recovery process. We are committed and dedicated to helping people throughout Western Washington and beyond with our expertise in business, real estate, tax law, and debt relief. Find us at richardseward.com or call us at 360-876-6425. We care about you.
Kidzan Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together we have partnered to bring you Awakened Life, as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awaken Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting with you. Hey, welcome back. This is Adam Seward. You're listening to Awaken Life. We're talking about waking up. Surprise, surprise. And what that means and how to do it. And we've gone through some pretty detailed explanation of a few things that are very helpful in terms of waking up. And we've been talking about koan. We've defined that, what that is, inquiry in general, whether it's self-inquiry, work of Byron Katie, just, you know, using a question to penetrate what's real. And we're also talking about meditation, because really, I mean, if you know us and you know what part of what we define awakening as, or how to get awakened, is we like to talk about meditation, because basically it's the practice of sitting and resting as the awake self that you are. And interestingly, you know, you can combine meditation and koan process. One of the things they do in Mondo Zen, I learned today, is that they actually sit with their eyes open, which you can try, anyone at home. And inquire, say, who awakens, you know, who's awake, who am I, right? With the eyes open, which is a very, you know, there's two schools of Zen, Paul, right?
Well, in the Japanese tradition, Jumpo is a Rinzai Zen master.
Rinzai,
okay. Zen, because this, you know, those three tenets of Buddhism started in basically Central East Asia, and then when it went to Japan, that broke into two schools, which is Soto Zen, and they're the ones that do Zazen practice, and then Rinzai Zen. And Rinzai is the ones that hit you with a stick, and it's very directed, and a teacher would really, is very...
So Rinzai is the koan side.
Exactly.
And Soto?
Soto Zen is the chicken taza, which means just sit. You just sit. That's it. Just sit down and
just
sit.
Just sit. You know, actually, I have taught that before to classes, and it's fun because... I'll say, okay, for the next 20 minutes, just sit. We're going to do what's called Zazen, mm-hmm. which, you know, like part of the Soto school.
Yeah.
We're just going to sit, nothing else. Just sit there. And it's fun because at the end of the practice, I like to throw in a koan, which is So raise your hand if you did more than just sit there. And, you know, and it's a trick question, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not even really a koan. It's just kind of like a pointing out. But and then naturally a few people will raise their hands, and because they're interpreting what I'm asking to be, you know, were you thinking? Were you going through your grocery list? You know what? But really, I'm asking the question literally. You know, raise your hand if you did anything. And, you know, people raise their hand, and then I just point out the fact that, well, I didn't see anybody move.
Yeah, you're just sitting there.
So the reality, you know, the question, what's real? That's the koan process. Yeah. The reality is, what did you do? You really did just sit there, and that's what they're asking you to pay attention to. But
They're asking you to pay attention to how you pay attention, right? And in the depth of which you can go there and continually ask a question with an open mind, will increase the level of the depth of your own insights about what's real and what's your story. Mm-hmm. And so this is the best way and the only way that's really proven to deconstruct this monkey mind of yours. This ego that we have is so relentless. It's going to spin. And if you, the culture, the TV, all the the media, it's always filling your mind with stuff to spin, and it's spinning. Sure. Now, you talked about your dream.
Yes.
This is when you want to spin with the unconditioned mind. Mm. That means let the energy and awakening move through you, and you're riding that, right?
Yeah.
Now, you don't want to just, but what happens when people first start meditating is they just spin in their mind, and they quit because they go, oh, it's too hard. I can't. I'm just thinking, and it's actually making things worse.
Yes.
Well, that's the point. It actually isn't making it worse. That's actually what's going on in your mind all the time. And you're stressed out, checked out, and in suffering, and you're kind of narcotizing your mind to the whole thing, you know, trying not to pay attention to it, think it'll get worse.
Right.
Well, it's sort of like frostbite. Mm. You're numb. But when you take your foot out of the cold, at first, when it's starting to, it hurts more, doesn't it, right?
Yeah.
This is what meditation is like at the beginning. It's hard for people to sit through that first part. They go, I know it's so, I've seen people do it, and they gain such freedom and so much, you know, like peace of mind from it. I just can't do it myself. So there's a lot of self-judgment.
Yes.
This is if that's coming up for you, you're doing it perfectly. Keep doing it. Mm-hmm. That's just, that is, spins out. It's like a hot tub. Yeah. You turn off the bubbles. It's going to take a while before it's clear and you can see your toes. Just stick with it.
Yeah.
Because your ego wants to get you off that mat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And ruin your life. It's going to want to turn you against your friends. It's going to want to go greed and fear.
But
and
I love what
stuff.
You said about it wants to get you off the mat, because that has been my experience. I mean, I realized very early on. I mean, you know, I had my initial awakening was in 2000. And then, I mean, I knew right away that the way to sustain this consciousness, the way to integrate it, the way to become it, essentially, is to meditate. I just knew that.
Yeah.
Because I understood it to be sitting as the truth rather than, like you said, you know, spinning in the world.
Yeah, well, the self-judgment comes from the idea that you're sitting there to become enlightened, right? And so then as you're thinking, you're like, this ain't it. I'm not enlightened. And it feels like a big failure the whole time. And at a certain point, the light goes on, and then the meditation becomes an expression of who you are.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it to become someone or to become, you know, that whole thing, that whole paradigm shifted. And now it's expression of your awakening and your free, and it's in what you're contemplating, these deep concepts that we talked about earlier, you know, emptiness. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Unconditioned mind.
Who am
I? And impermanence. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
then
impermanence,
you gain such an appreciation because you realize everything is coming in and out of existence, and it's here such a precious time, and you're actually present for it so that you're alive to it and you appreciate it. Then you're coming from, and then that's a relationship you have to yourself at the deep levels from appreciation.
Mm.
Then you begin to share that with others. Now, the thing that you're talking about, the types of meditation,
mm-hmm.
for most people, the easiest way in is there's dhyana, dharana, and samadhi. Those are the three.
Okay.
Those are three aspects of your processes to wake up.
Okay.
But the dhyana essentially is a kind of one-pointed type of meditation. So you'll meditate about one thing. Now, this is in every tradition, Christian, Judaic. There's somebody that's like, just sit, either a contemplative prayer or meditate, and just think of one thing, or focus on a mantra, or focus on your breath. So you just think about that until that's all that there is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's the easiest way to do it. And that way you calm your mind down so that you can actually become aware about what's really happening. You got to quiet your mind.
Yes.
Okay? Then there's a pop through, and that's dharana, which is an awareness practice. Then you can sit and meditate in an auditorium or on a freeway, because it's not about quieting your mind so that nothing's distracting you. You're actually the awareness that's aware of everything arising from moment to moment. And so you, nothing is distracting you because it's all arising in your awareness. And that becomes your awareness practice. And to get there, you can't just do it like that.
You know, I was thinking today, you know, what is meditation? You know, and people have asked me that before. Adam, what's meditation? And, you know, what came to me today was intentionally and skillfully attuning one's attention to the sacred. Now, what I hear you talking about is the skillfully part, because, you know, there's a specific for true meditation, not just, you know, twiddling your thumbs or whatever. True meditation, it means there's a specific skill that you're using, you know, like you said, a concentration practice, whether it's the Hong Sao or some mantra technique.
Yeah.
But it's like any sacred art, that skill has, you know, like karate or whatever you want to say, that skill has degrees or levels of mastery.
Absolutely.
So if you're not practicing a skill when you're meditating that has, you know, at least in these earlier practices, that has degrees or levels of mastery, then you're just sitting, which is okay too.
Can't do it wrong.
You cannot do it wrong, but I just like to be clear, you know?
Yes, it takes some time.
Man,
just to sit 20 days, you know, 20 minutes a day, and you do it, you'll find it starts to everything shifts. Everything will shift. And what the last piece, by the way, beyond Duran and Dion,
Samadhi.
Samadhi.
That's my favorite.
Yes, and that's like, did you get the joke? There is this cosmic absurdity. Do you laugh? This is often time with the great mystics. They sit for years and years, and they just crack up at a certain point. They just realize, okay, that's me. It's hilarious. You know, it's joy. It's pure bliss. And I've been making this choice to live in this ridiculous story that's complete nonsense and untrue. And it's, you know, until that occurs, you're going to judge yourself for doing it, and judge more, what's worse, you'll judge your friends for doing it and tell them not to and how not to. But there'll be a time you crack up and you go, oh, this is fantastic. Now I have a real choice. Now my mind is open to, I'm now curious, and that's taken the place of fear is curiosity, right? And concern and compassion is now taking the place of anger, which is the big defense mechanism.
Yeah. Another way of talking about samadhi, and I think satori and samadhi are similar.
Yeah, of course,
you know,
Kensho and Japanese Zen.
Since we've been talking about Zen, you know, but, you know, one of the ways it's talked about is the dissolution of the ego, the small self, you know, in the ocean of being, of the true self, of the supreme self.
You know, the Catholics, they talk about it in terms of a moment of grace. It's when spirit comes for you, right? It pulls you in from the other side.
Sure.
So
and they talk about a marriage a lot of the time, you know, it's in Christianity of the divine and, you know, I and the Father are one and that sort of thing. I think, Christ, you know, when Christ said, I and the Father are one, I think he was expressing a samadhi state.
Absolutely. Yeah. He said in the book of John, we're getting theological, he said, before Abraham was, I am.
Mm.
That's an interesting thing to say, right? Before he was,
wait,
I am.
What's that koan? What? Show me your original face before your grandparents were born?
Yeah, that's it.
That sounds
familiar. See, in the non-dual traditions, they talk about I am-ness, or that simple feeling of being. This is the unconditioned mind in its pure state. It's a purity of mind. And the more that you experience, you do this in meditation, you do it in silence. Because silence is empty. And emptiness, does that end? Can you split it in half?
Hmm.
See, these are the questions that you're like, people, oh, yeah, no, that comes and goes. Oh, really? Emptiness comes and goes?
Yeah.
It does not.
We've unpacked, you know, we've really unpacked this topic.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're about out of time. So just to recap, you know, what is awakening? Well, it's a deep realization of the fundamental nature of your mind, which is purely and simply awake. And how do you get there? Well, meditation, koan practice, inquiry.
Appreciation.
Just sitting, penetrating. I mean, these are the doorways that take us into that. So, as always, thank you, both of you. If you want to get a hold of me, www.adamseward.com. If you want to get a hold of either of these two guys, richardseward.com. Keep on keeping on. See you next week.
See you guys.
Hey, everyone, you're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Don't touch that dial. We'll be beginning a brand new show at the top of the hour with one of our amazing hosts, Transformation Talk Radio. Talk radio to change the world.